Made a searching and fearless moral inventory. What's a moral inventory? An honest look at who I really am. In step four, I take a courageous look at who I am, past and present, defining as best I can the ideas and the beliefs and the attitudes and the behaviors that serve me well, and the ones that are at the root of my food problem. The thinking that led to my food addiction, because compulsive eating, as I've said multiple times, is the symptom, not the real problem. I identified my toxic foods, trigger foods, whatever you want to call them, in step one. Now I'm looking for the toxic thinking that's at the root of the problem. I began to see at about this point in that first year of my program that my sponsor was right when he said that phrase, "I have met the enemy and it is me." Oh yeah, maybe I am the problem. Maybe I should stop blaming all those other people. So the fourth asked me to look at myself at all levels. Who am I really? What drove me to unconsciously use food as a drug for comfort or escape? The fourth is about me facing me as I am. I'm taking an inventory of everything on the shelves over there in my brain, between my ears, the stuff that's okay and the stuff that needs to be thrown out or changed. Big Book 64, quote, "Our food was but a symptom. We had to get down to causes and conditions." Obviously, I'm changing the word alcohol to food. Page 143, Big Book, "To get over compulsive eating will require a transformation of thought and attitude." So that's what I got to look at here in four and five, is what are these thoughts and these attitudes that needs to be fixed. 08, 12, and 12, page 30, quote, "We must change if we are to recover." Someone once said, "Not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it's faced." And now here at four, I'm asked to soberly, absolutely look at myself honestly. A searching and fearless look does require abstinence, right? An unclouded mind, seeing and feeling in technicolor. So I had to be sober. I had to be abstinent when I got here. Those trigger foods had to not be in my brain. That's the what I had to do. I needed a guide. It may sound like I could do all this stuff automatically, but you can't do it by yourself. You need something to help you get in there. So I'm not sitting down to write an autobiography. That's not what a fourth step is. I'm looking for specific things that are proven shortcomings. And lots of people know what shortcomings are and what they are. I did my first fourth step 42 years ago. Since then, with myself and sponsees, I've tried a lot of different ways. Even written a four-step guide on my own several years ago. The first guide, believe it or not, I was handed in 1982, was a very old one from Bill and Bob's era that was written by Sister Ignatia in Akron. Some of you know who she is. And it was on the seven deadly sins and the Ten Commandments. I was an atheist, remember? That one didn't quite fit me very well. It did not fit me very well. So what I did, though, pick up in looking at that guide was that for every negative, there's a corresponding positive. Just very, very important point. That became really important for me in step six and seven, as we'll talk about. So then the first thing I did was then go to the four column approach in the Big Book that probably many of you have done or know about. Big Book uses examples. These are just examples of resentment, fear, and sex. So in 64 to 70, it goes through doing this. Resentments are defined as feelings of bitter hurt or indignation, which come from rightly or wrongly held feelings of being injured or offended. So in column one, the Big Book says, write what you're angry with, who or what you're angry with, who or what you resent. In column two, I write why, exactly why am I angry? What did they do specifically or not do? In column three, it asked me to write what basic instinct of mine did or does the thing I resent interfere with. In other words, how did it really injure me? Now, the basic instincts for example, are our God-given human instincts, God-given human instincts for recognition, wanting to belong, wanting to be accepted, wanting to feel good about ourselves, wanting to feel secure about material things, wanting to have a relationship with other people, our ambitions for achievement, to have sex. These are all basic instincts that we're born with. They're not bad, they're just basic instincts. All these things are inside of us. We're born with them. Am I resentful of someone because some of these things are being blocked or hurt in some way? In column four, we get to the, column four, we get to the pay dirt. We now look at our part in each of the resentments. Putting out of my mind what others have done, I look at my own behaviors or possible mistakes in the situation. Where have I been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, or inconsiderate? For example, we often resent some action or behavior by someone else that in truth is partly a reaction to things we have done or not done. So for example, real life example, if I work all the time and then resent my wife for nagging at me because I'm never home, haven't I in fact stimulated the nagging? If my spouse strays and I resent it, what was my part? Didn't I, in fact, sort of ignore her or take her for granted? So, isn't my resentment actually based on a reaction to something that was partly my fault to begin with? So, that fourth column is me searching here for behavior or thinking that might need changing, that might be setting me up for hurt and failure and resentments. Too often, we are the enemy, as I said, and not the other thing. Then in the big book examples, we do the same things for the subjects of fear and for sex. That was the beginning for me, but didn't really dig enough of my distorted thinking out. So I went through the big book and the AA 12 and 12, it's all we had at that point, and I pulled out all the defects and shortcomings that were specifically mentioned in there. And I came out with a list of about 30 of them, and that's what I looked at in my four-step inventory. I searched my 41 years of life for all those things. So jump 42 years ahead now to right now, to current time. Today, no one can say they don't know how or where to get started, right? In addition to the big book four-column approach, we now have an OA 12-step workbook. We have the OA workshop and study guide. And of course, the second edition of the OA 12 and 12 has 100 plus questions in it that cross nine categories in the fourth step. So there are plenty of guides there, easily available for us to drive in. So the next time somebody says, "But I don't know where to start," say bullshit and tell them where to start. Just get at it. Some of these defects that I saw as I defined them, some of the defects that are in the books and that I saw, selfish and self-centered, this excessive concern with myself, inflated idea of my values. You know, as long as I get what I want, I don't really care much about others. Anger and resentment, feeling wronged by another person, inability to stop thinking about the wrong. Anger held on to becomes resentment. Anger held on to over and over and over becomes a resentment. Fear, afraid of something or someone that's likely to be dangerous, painful, or threatening. Shame, feeling bad about ourselves, feeling something is wrong with me, inadequate, falling short. I don't really have what it takes. Not good enough. I'm not a good enough mother, a good enough father, a good enough spouse, a good enough brother, a good enough sister, a good enough fill in the blank. Guilt, feeling bad about something I've done or about something we think we should not have done, or guilt about not doing something we think we should have done. I should have stepped up and helped. I didn't. Dishonesty, theft, cheating, dishonesty with self, deceiving myself, believing my excuses, pride and false pride, hiding the real me because I'm ashamed of who I am, pretending to be something I'm not, negative thinking, expecting the worst, I'm not worth it, world is a pretty awful place, most people are bad, not good, I could never stay abstinent. The updated OA workbook duplicates these categories and things that I just went through. Those are all in the books. Some of my own stuff in that first one, fear of not being good enough, a failure, making a mistake, pride, always pretending to be what I was not. I was a chameleon, I guess is the word. whatever I thought I would need to be so that I could get your love and approval and strokes, that's what I would do. So I was whoever I thought you wanted me to be. Selfishness, me, focused on getting rather than giving. The 12 steps are a very gradual transition from a mind of getting to a mind of giving. Self-centered, spinning scenarios in my brain about how things should go, how people should act, what they should do, how situations should come out. Self-pity, blaming. The whole world was my enemy. Nothing is my fault. If you had my fill in the blank, my spouse, my parents, my culture where I grew up in. I'm a victim of circumstances and of parents, etc. If only things had been different, I would be great. Poor me, poor me, pour me a drink, as they say in AA. Anger and resentment. I used to say I was the most angry person on the earth when I came in here. Angry about everything. Guilt and shame. Hanging on to bad feelings about myself. There's a difference between guilt and shame. I'll talk about that in a few minutes. I had some skeletons in my life closet that surfaced in that first fourth step. Things I thought I might take to my grave. They came out. Some wrong beliefs. And these were the really killers. And I didn't get these clearly at the beginning. It was gradual. But I began to see that my culture and my parents had given me some ideas that were just screwed up. Like, my worth is dependent upon what others think of me. Wrong. My worth is dependent upon what I think of me. I need everyone's approval to feel okay. Wrong. I don't need everyone's approval. Self-sufficiency is man's greatest virtue. I told you about that one before. Gr asking for help is weakness. Total bullshit. Suffering is a virtue. You're closer to God when things are painful. Having fun is somehow sort of sinful. That's the culture that I grew up in the backwoods of Appalachia. I am a prisoner of my past. I am shaped and trapped in who I am, what I experienced, and where I came from. I have no real hope of changing. Wrong. I can change with help. The best way to never be disappointed, Don, my mother said, is to expect the worst from people. People are basically bad and they will take advantage of you if you let them. Wrong. If I go through life with an attitude like that, I'm going to be miserable all the time. The attitude I have now is more often than not, people will do the right thing if given a chance. If I'm not totally competent in everything I do, I'm not a worthwhile person. Therefore, I shouldn't do things that I can't do well. What that means is I never do anything new. I never explore anything. That means I'm just stuck. So I've got to keep doing things that I don't know how to do well in order to learn how to do them well. Achievement equals self-esteem and self-worth. Certainly, I had that. I gained feelings of self-worth through material things: job, home, car, recognition, money. Nope. It took me a while to get this one. You don't get this in the beginning, but eventually you get it. Feelings of self-worth don't come from material things. My pain is caused by other people or events outside of me, so I have little ability to control my feelings. Wrong. I'm not just a victim. I can, in fact, stop my worrying and pain. I can, in fact, change how I feel at this moment by changing the sentences going through my head. And that's one of the very big things that I've learned to do in my program. It's a sign of weakness to admit I don't know something. Wrong. It's a sign of honesty and integrity and humility, all positive things. Some distorted thinking I had, again, didn't immediately get it, took a little while. This all or nothing thinking, making a mistake does not make me a mistake. Generalizing, I conclude that one thing that happened to me once will occur over and over again. Bad thinking, not so. Focusing on the negative, I pick out a negative detail in any situation and I dwell on it exclusively, then perceiving that the whole situation is negative. Right? So if I don't want like one person in the meeting, then the whole meeting is negative. Crazy thinking. In sponsoring people through the fourth step, let me wrap up the fourth by saying I have people come out of the fourth with three lists to move on. One is a rating of the shortcomings. So if they've looked at 10 shortcomings, 12 shortcomings, whatever it may be, so let's say the 9 out of the 12 and 12, I ask them to rate them 1 to 10. Which ones are the biggies? What is the number one thing on there? Because not all of them are the same. Some of you have fear maybe right at the top of somebody's list. It may be in the middle of the list for some other people. 10 level fear means it dominates your life. Everyone has some level of fear. Everyone gets angry sometimes, but permanent anger and resentment keeps us eating. So you need to understand that. So I ask people to rate those, and because that's what we're going to use in six in 6 and 7. The second summary I ask people to do is a preliminary list of people that you may have identified in your writing, to which amends might be needed later. We're talking about 8th and 9th step, but now you're going through your second summary, as I said, people that you might have harmed. And the third list, believe it or not, is assets. It's important on the fourth to look at our assets, not just our defects. Inventory means everything on the shelf. In the OA 12 and 12, page 36, quote, "We have answered many questions and identified many shortcomings to be addressed later. But no matter how many shortcomings we have, it's important to recognize that we have many good qualities as well. Now's the time to make a list of our positive characteristics," unquote. And so it goes on to list 27 qualities. For example, am I generally accepting, authentic, considerate, courteous? Notice the word generally. It means no one is perfect. Am I generally kind, generally loyal, generally tolerant, etc.? Step 5. Admit it to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. In step 5, I shared my lengthy fourth step inventory with another human being, someone who had gone before me through the steps and who could help me better understand myself and see that the ideas and beliefs and behaviors that needed help me see the ones that need changing. So it was kind of a validity check to ensure that I'd been honest. In a way, it was also for me the beginning of rejoining the human race. I'll say what I mean in a minute on that. The wall began to come down. It was the first time in my 41 years that I had ever been 100% honest with another human being. It was quite an experience. Paraphrasing the big book on 72 and 73, quote, "I need to clean it all out until I have humbled myself enough to tell someone my story, my entire story, holding back nothing. I will not learn enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty to stay abstinent. I will lead again." Sitting down with my sponsor to go through all I had written on the fourth was a bit scary at first, but I had to remember that I committed in the third to do this work, right? That's what the third was, the commitment to do it. Okay, that's scary. I'm going to go do it. I said I would go to any lengths. So I went in scared on that first fourth step, but I came out feeling wonderful. I came out feeling free, and I came out feeling full of gratitude. In fact, I didn't quite know what to do with the feelings. I remember very clearly walking out of his office and walking back across down the hallway and not knowing quite what was going on in me. They say the hardest time for an atheist is when he's really thankful and has no one to thank. And I think that's kind of where I was, but didn't realize quite what was going on, right? This anti-God guy. The fifth was also cleansing for me. As I sat there for 4 hours reading what I had written, some skeletons, as I mentioned before, I thought I would take to the grave. I had a wall of pretense and false pride built around me that was designed to keep people out, to keep myself from being hurt. That went all the way back to my early 20s when I was really, really had a heartbroken. That wall began to come down here in the fifth.
Oh, that's 20 minutes, Don.
20 or 30?
Oh, that was 20.
Okay, thanks. I had built that wall in my early 20s, as I said, to try to protect myself from not getting my heart broken again. I became a rock, like my father was, by the way, and I stayed a rock for 20 years with this wall around me. Yeah, I said the words, Well, but not. So the fifth was the beginning of relearning to trust and to connect with other human beings. The full disclosure also changed how I felt about myself, and this was key. It was the beginning of having some integrity, that is, knocking off the pretense and the false pride and being who I really was. And when I am who I really am, I began to respect myself. This was the beginning of that in a fifth step. Self-acceptance and self-forgiveness is the first step in changing what needs to be changed. I can't change me until I accept who and where I am. So the change process begins with an awareness of defects, then accepting them as they are, as they truly are, and then asking God to help me change. Step four was awareness. Step five was acceptance. Step six and seven were the action. What I was also doing here in my fifth, without understanding what exactly was going on, was I was opening myself to the healing power of the 12-step process. A healing power greater than myself. Didn't understand it, but that's what was going on. In retrospect, I can see. And looking back, I can see my spiritual journey actually began here in step five, after I had been totally honest with another human being. Something was going on deep within me, bigger than me, bigger than me. At the end of the fifth, I have validated with the help of another person a foundation for what I'll work on in six and seven. I've identified the problems, the causes and conditions, right, to use the big book phrase. And now it's time to get busy with higher powers' help, changing what needs to be changed. So step six and seven, one paragraph in the big book each on these, right? That's not the way it works for me, as you'll hear. Six and seven is where I is the big change part of my program. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character, and seven, humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. So I identify the problems in four and five. Now in six and seven, I identify the solutions and ask God to help me learn to live in those solutions. So six for me is about becoming willing to change. Seven is about beginning the change. With God's help. Willingness to change, unless followed by action, is delusion. Exactly the same as that third step, right? I can be willing, but if I don't take the action and do something, then it doesn't, then I'm not really willing to change. And that's what making the changes and practicing the changes, remember that word practice, does, shows God that I'm truly willing to change. So, in a way, as I said, six and seven are like step one. In one, I replaced my addictive foods and behaviors with right foods and a structured way of eating. I'm a 3 meal a day guy, period. Here in six and seven, I'm going to begin replacing my self-destructive thinking with healthy thinking. Poison foods, healthy foods, poison thoughts, healthy thoughts. Over time, I've come to believe that God is not going to do for me what I need to do for myself. What He does do is God has helped me do what I God does do is to help me do what I need to do. Right? I sometimes say, God doesn't fix things. God gives me the courage and helps me take the actions to fix things. You know, God doesn't have hands. God doesn't do skywriting. God doesn't do my shopping. God doesn't do my cleaning. God doesn't do my whatever, whatever. I have to do it. What God gives me is the strength to do it. So the program helps those that help themselves, I believe. I see change as a cooperative process between my higher power and myself. I see my life as a partnership with God. This is the concept of higher power that has worked for me now for some time. I'm in a partnership with this thing that's greater than me that I don't understand, can't define exactly, can't prove or not prove, but I can feel. I can feel. I've been given free will to make choices and the intelligence to deal with life. I'm not a puppet on a string. I'm responsible for how I feel and what I do. My life is what I choose to do every minute, every day. My first sponsor used to say, misery is optional. And I wanted to punch him. What are you, crazy? But I just shut my mouth and kept going. Now I get it. He also said, growing old is mandatory, Don, but growing up is optional. And I thought he was full of, you know what? But now I get what he meant. I am in charge. It's me that can grow up and take responsibility for myself. Even at 41, it's not too late to start growing up, but that's where I was. So my job here in 6 and 7 for me is to take each of the shortcomings, whether thinking or behavior, and identify the opposite, the solution. What's the problem? What's the solution? Then, with higher power's help, start practicing as best I can the new ideas and behaviors. I change bad habits by replacing them with good habits. Pretty simple concept. That's the way it works for me. So 6 and 7 were critical and remain critical for my recovery. Here's where, with higher power's help and a sponsor's help, I began to develop the roadmap, laying out where I needed to go and the things that needed to be changed. Here in 6 and 7, we'll be clearly defining the emotional solutions to our disease and then begin practicing those solutions. Focus on the word practice. Forming new habits means practicing the new habits. So we act our way into right thinking, not think our way into right acting. We correct bad habits by daily practice of good ones. So give you four quotes, five quotes. OA 12 and 12, page 47, quote, trying to practice the new thinking and behaviors to the best of our ability shows our true willingness to change. Page 55, OA 12 and 12. If we persist in visualizing and practicing better ways of life, they will, with our higher power's help, eventually become second nature. Page 55, OA 12 and 12. We are becoming honest, caring, nurturing, wise, and effective human beings as we practice our new behaviors day by day. Page 56, same book. Repeated practice of step 7 enables us to form a working relationship with our higher power, through which we are relieved of the defects that have blocked our effectiveness in the world. We practice the new thinking and behavior like we would practice any other new skill we're trying to learn, be it swimming, be it golf, being it fill in the blank. Remember the importance of having goals. Your 6 and 7 plans are your goals. People without goals are in trouble. Goals give our lives directions. Goals, in essence, mean we have some control over our lives and what we're doing. We're not just reacting to life, we are proactively approaching life with these goals. So, goals define the path we will walk. Here's some of my own genetic examples of goals that are coming out of 6 and 7 for me. Controlling. Practice letting go of expectations on others. Stop imposing shoulds and oughts. Stop writing scripts in my head for how they're supposed to act. Accept what is. Work on changing what can be changed in mostly me and accepting what can't be changed. Right? So that's practice letting go of expectations. Practice letting go of this other stuff that I was talking about. Practice taking responsibility for myself and my actions. Remember, I blamed everybody for everything. Remember, how I feel is up to me. I'm not a prisoner of what they think. Practice letting people in, letting them know how I really think and feel. Practice making myself a little vulnerable. Practice being who I am rather than being what I think will get me applause or keep me out of conflict. Practice knowing that my worth is based upon what I think of me, not what others think of me. Practice feeling that God loves me unconditionally. Do things in my life that allow me to respect myself. Accept that disagreement does not equal personal rejection. That was a big one for me in my work life. Disagreement does not equal personal rejection. If somebody disagreed with me in the workplace, it didn't say that I'm a shithead and blah, blah, blah. It just said they disagree me all with this. Now let's talk about it. Practice faith in a higher power. And eventually, faith will replace fear. Remember, I came out of 2 with just a belief. But belief plus all the actions of these steps eventually becomes faith. It progresses. Practice courage. Practice doing it anyway. Practice just doing it. New skills are learned by practice, practice, practice. Do not procrastinate out of fear of failure. I used to tell my sponsor, I can't do that. I'm afraid to do that. And he what he said, I'm going to quote, I don't give a shit if you're afraid. Do it anyway. Okay. I would take a deep breath and I would go and do it. And guess what happens after you've done the thing that you're afraid of? You're not afraid of it anymore. And then you can do it again and again and again. And that's the way it is. You do it anyway.
Oh, now it's 30, Don. Now it's 30.
Thank you. Perfectionism, practice believing that I am not a mistake because I make a mistake. Accept my humanness and my fallibility. All right. Now, very quickly, we don't have time to do all this, but what I ask people to do in 6 and 7 is two columns, right? Think two columns. Your left column is going to be the problem that you came out of. Remember, you summarized your problems. Your right column is going to be the solutions. That's the big picture, right? Left column is the problem, right column is the solution. Figure out what it is that you need to do. Decide which shortcomings you want to work on. The left column will be examples of flawed thinking or behavior. Now you're going to get very specific. You're going to write down exactly in the list exactly how and why the defect manifests itself in your life. And in the right column, you're going to do the solutions. So, for example, self-pity and blaming. Don, one of Don's. My left column says, I am a victim of bad genetics, bad parents, bad marriage, and bad breaks. All right. Okay, I've listed, and also I blame my boss and others at work for my lack of motivation. So I've listed two ways my self-pity and blaming is hurting me. Now I go to the second column, and for each one, I'm going to write my action plan, right? So the first thing was, I'm a victim. Poor me. Bad parents, bad marriage. Now, in my right column, I'm writing actions. Okay. Maybe several things listed here, and this is the detail that I say that you need to think about. First, okay, I will surrender the victim thinking to God and take responsibility for my life. The past is unchangeable, but my future is up to me. Second, I will immediately stop complaining about her, accept what is, and begin taking action to deal with it. The main action is speaking up. Third, I will become proactive rather than reactive. No more simply waiting for things to happen. I'll make things happen. Fourth, I will set reasonable goals for myself and work toward achieving them. Fifth, I will clearly define how I want to live my life and work on staying aligned with that. Six, I will do a gratitude list every day. Remember, poor me, victim, gratitude list or wonderful antidote. Seventh, I will accept, forgive, and love myself unconditionally as God loves me unconditionally. Remember, these are goals. I don't say magically you can start loving yourself instantly if you have not done that before. It takes practice, 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 believe it or not, to start to love yourself. Eighth, I will accept responsibility for my actions. It's not what happens, but how I react to what happens. So, final comments on 6 and 7. When someone who's been around for a while calls me and tells me they have fallen into relapse, I begin by asking them several questions. For example, tell me about how you do your 10th every day, John. Your morning, how do you do your quiet time 11th every day? And thirdly, what service are you doing for step 12? So this is a relapser on the phone saying, I'm stuck, I don't know what to do. And so we're going to look at what he's not doing, right? Usually they're not able to answer any of these questions. They become complacent, thinking they had everything under control. Unfortunately, recovery didn't work, doesn't work that way. A daily treatment plan is required. But the question that every person in relapse I talk to fails, every single one fails, is tell me what things you began working on changing about yourself in 6 and 7. And they never have an answer. because they didn't really work on things. They didn't really set goals. They didn't get specific about the things that they needed to work on changing, which, by the way, you should inventory in your tent, as we will talk about later today. Inventory you're in your tent. Part of that inventory is how are you doing on these action plans coming out of the seventh. So I say, well, if you didn't need to make any changes in yourself to find freedom from the obsession, what are you doing? And the response is usually silence. So either they're not working 10, 11, and 12 every day, or they just haven't changed enough. So we could go on and on about six and seven, as you could see. You probably have 59 questions right now about that, but you get the idea. Think problem, think solution. Detailed on exactly what things that you can do. Let's 334. Okay, let's do eight and nine, and then we will do some sharing and finish up with 10, 11, and 12. Those will be shorter than this. But steps, these four to nine is where all the action is, right? One, two, and three are the base of the house. Four through nine are the walls of the house. 10, 11, and 12 are the roof of the house. But the roof doesn't do any good if the walls aren't strong. So four through nine are the walls. Made a list of all parts. So we've worked on ourselves here in our thinking and our brains in four through seven. Now we're going to work on cleaning up the outside. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Why should we do this? Why do we do step to nine? One, to get rid of the guilt, remorse, shame, and fears associated with people we've hurt, we've threatened, or we've caused trouble for. To get rid of the guilt and shame. Two, because setting things right with people we've harmed is the right thing to do. And three, because the peace of mind required for sustained recovery cannot be had without cleaning up our past. So, what are we going to do specifically? We're going to make a list based upon our work in steps four to seven of people we've directly harmed. And we're going to develop the willingness to one, talk to them, two, apologize for the specific harm we did, three, make restitution if needed. And four, key, change the behavior, our behavior, so we don't commit the same harms again. It does absolutely no good to say, I'm sorry if you continue to do the same behavior and you're going to do the same hurts again. Amends means to change. Key part of eight and nine. Four to seven was working on the inside, as I said. Eight and nine are about cleaning up the outsides, and I must change. What is harm? Harm can be physical, mental, emotional, spiritual. Now remember, we're looking at actual harms, not just thinking bad things, right? I did something, or perhaps I didn't do something I should have done. I should have stepped up, or I didn't. Going up to Mary and say, I really want to make amends because I've never liked you my whole life. I didn't harm her. I just, right? We don't make amends for things that we think. Big book, no, AA 12 and 12, a couple of quotes. If our tempers are consistently bad, we arouse anger. If we lie or cheat, we deprive others not only of their goods, but of their emotional security. Let us think, still quoting, let us think about some of the subtler things that can sometimes be quite as damaging. Suppose that in our family lives we happen to be miserly, irresponsible, callous, or cold. Suppose that we are irritable, critical, impatient, and humorless. Suppose we lavish attention upon one member of the family and neglect the others. What happens when we try to dominate the whole family, either by a rule of iron or by a constant outpouring of minute directions? What happens when we wallow in depression, self-pity, oozing from every pore, and inflict that upon those around us? So that's out of the AA 12 and 12, 80 at page 80 and 81. Good stuff that helps remind me that, just harming isn't just some big punching somebody in the face. It's more subtle things in our relationships. I did my first eighth and ninth list back in 82. Hard. Thank God I had an experienced sponsor to help me whittle my list down to about 15. I think I probably started with 50. I learned that I owe amends for actual harm that I did, not bad things that I thought. Forgiveness was an important part of 8 and 9 for me. I can't make amends to someone I've hurt if I haven't truly forgiven them for harms they may have done to me. Not so easy sometimes, right? OA 12 and 12, page 60. As long as we have not forgiven people for harms they have done us, we will find it impossible to make sincere amends to them for our side of the conflicts. The complicating factor for me was that I learned I couldn't forgive others for making mistakes and being human. I couldn't forgive others until I had forgiven myself for making mistakes and being human. I had to walk through the door of self-forgiveness in order to get to the door of forgiveness of others for harms done to me. Forgiveness is letting go of the need for revenge and releasing the bitterness and the anger. Differentiating guilt and shame was very helpful to me in the forgiveness process. Now, guilt is for actions taken, things that I did. Shame is about what I didn't do. For example, not living up to my own expectations or others' expectations. So I make amends to others for things I've done to them. That's guilt. I make amends to me for my feelings of shame for what I didn't do, didn't live up to. I had to learn that having a failure doesn't make me a failure, that making a mistake does not make me a mistake. So my new way of living is to accept my mistakes, learn from my mistakes, forgive myself and others if they're involved, clean up the messes I've made, and move on. Now, we don't have time to go into it, but there are three or four excellent techniques of forgiveness in the literature, right? There's in the Big Book, page 67, Big Book, page 552, OA 12 and 12 on page 60 and 61. Techniques for forgiveness that are very valuable. The Don's version of the Big Book 67 prayer, God help me remember that Mary is a sick person. I need to show her the same patience, tolerance, kindness, love, and compassion I would cheerfully grant a sick friend. Show me how I can be helpful to her. Keep me from being angry. Help me see her as you see her, God. Big Book 552 talks about praying for the ones we resent. Quote, if you have a resentment you want to be free of, if you will pray for the person or the thing you resent, you will be free. If you'll ask in prayer for everything you want for yourself to be given to them, you'll be free. Ask for their health, their prosperity, their happiness, and you will be free. Even when you don't really want it for them, and your prayers are only words and you don't mean it, go ahead and do it anyway. Do it every day for 2 weeks, and you'll find you have come to mean it and to want it for them. And you will realize that where you used to feel bitterness and resentment and hatred, you will now feel compassionate understanding and love. That seemed totally, totally insane to me when somebody showed that to me until I did it, and it worked. And if I were to ask the 100 and whatever people here, how many of you have ever done this and how many has it worked for you? Were to raise your hands, half of the meeting would raise their hands. It does work. It sounds crazy, but it works. It takes all of the venom out of you. The OA 12 and 12, 60 and 61 also has some very good process on working on forgiveness. It's all about our first, it says, our first step toward forgiving someone might be to write down the reasons why we're angry. And it goes through a lengthy paragraph about what you can do. And it works. It works. And then, of course, there's the ultimate Big Book 419, acceptance. Acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. When I'm disturbed, I find some person, place, thing, or situation, some fact of my life unacceptable to me, and I can find no serenity until I accept that person's place, thing, or situation as being exactly the way it's supposed to be. All right, let's, in the interest of time, let me just make some points, final points on 8 and 9 before we wrap and share. 1, 8, 9 say all persons. That means all persons, everyone we've hurt, even though they've hurt us. 2, remember I'm making amends for things done, not feelings. 3, make sure you've reviewed your script with your sponsor. Also, by the way, make sure you don't do 8 and 9 until you've done 1 through 7. The steps are in an order for a reason. 4, direct amends means face to face if possible. It ensures we've done our utmost to set things right face to face and often opens up compassion and goodwill and forgiveness. What if we can't do it face to face? Big Book 83 says, quote, some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter, or there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases, but we don't delay if it can be avoided. Point 6, when not to make amends, when it might cause them harm. Out of the 15 that I mentioned, I made 14 because there was one I was afraid it would cause harm and did not do that. Many years later, I did it. Our attitude, point 7, our attitude when making amends, page 83. And this is important. Quote, we should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping when we meet them. As God's people, we stand on our own feet. We don't crawl before everyone, anyone. Step 9 is about standing up, being responsible adult. 8, as I've mentioned, our side of the street. We're there to sweep off our side of the street, never trying to tell him or her what they should do. His faults are not discussed. Hard sometimes when you're sitting there. Don't get into their stuff. You're there to talk about your stuff. Remember, this is for me, not them. I'm doing this to not doing this to make them feel better. I'm cleaning up my side of the street. And remember, important point, no expectations. They don't owe me forgiveness, and I don't need forgiveness from them to move forward. Two more points. Unable to make amends, page 83. It's not a perfect world. Quote, there may be some things we can never fully right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. So give it to God and let it go. And in the big book, of course, you get the promises that are coming up right now. I'll skip talking about them and just wrap it up. That was about the fastest 4 through 9 that you will ever see. I'm sure it's like drinking water from a fire hose, right? But I wanted to cover all those points with you. So now it's a 3:45, about. So why don't we take 15 minutes, do some sharing, like we did last time, 2 minutes each. I'll turn it back over. And then let's take a 5-minute break when we finish that, and we'll come back and we'll talk about 10, 11, and 12. And I will do a summary of the steps, and I will talk about the principles for living that are in the book as I see it, and some good stuff. So don't quit now. You've got to hear 10, 11, and 12 too. So I'll turn it back to the chair for the sharing.
Okay. Hi, everybody. Thank you again, Don. Please, as Don says, stick around. There's more to come.